So Jared asked me, I don't know, it was probably a couple of weeks ago. He said, hey, would you take a Sunday? And I said, yeah. He said, your topic will be sloth. Wait a minute. Sloth? Why do I have to get sloth? Laura got hypocrisy, for crying out loud. How come I have to have sloth? What is Jared trying to say? Okay, do I kind of enjoy sitting? Yeah? I call it contemplation, introspection, meditation. Craig calls it, you sitting around doing nothing again? I have twin nephews. They're juniors in college now, but when they were born, their mom had to be on bed rest for at least the last month of her pregnancy, and everybody felt so sorry for her and expressed sympathy, and I didn't get what the problem was. Just got to lay in bed. Okay, so is this probably a pretty appropriate topic for me? He might have been kind of close. Okay, he might have hit the nail right on the head. I am inclined to a bit of lethargy myself, but as a teacher, I had to encourage students who also at times were inclined to a bit of inertia to do the work that we asked them to do. What we teachers know is that two main things stop kids from doing the work that we want them to do. Either they don't see the relevance, you know, why am I doing this? Or they don't feel capable of the job. That not seeing the relevance thing, when I was a young parent, I would try to say to the kids, because my mom had said to me, make your bed. Jenna just didn't do it. The boys were never that openly defiant, so I would go in the morning and their beds were perfectly made and they were sleeping on top of their perfectly made bed. They weren't going to be defiant, but they also were not going to waste their time making that bed. Our gospel story is about a specific kind of work, though. Our gospel story is about our being called to co-create the kingdom of God. If you listen to the Lord's Prayer, it says, give us this, no, it says that thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. Thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. So God's kingdom is to be created here. Now, what does God's kingdom look like? Well, we have stories of it with the Eden, with paradise. It's the whole lion and lamb laying down together. Now, that sounds pretty good, right? Everybody sees the relevance of that. So what's the problem? Why do sometimes we not throw ourselves into trying to work with God to create that kingdom? Oh my goodness, is this job big, right? This week, I went to a meeting, Stephanie was there too, where we talked about what can teachers do to help kids who've been traumatized. Now, before you say, okay, are we talking about some kind of snowflake trauma? No, I'm talking about, we have a kid in our schools right now who hid in a closet and listened to his dad be shot and killed, that kind of trauma. So I'm thinking about this topic, right, to get ready to do this, and I start reading. I found so many examples, I finally had to stop looking. Let me just share a few of these. One of the articles that I read was about, I guess that there are a lot of retirement communities in Las Vegas. Because if you want to live in a cosmopolitan area, Las Vegas is relatively cheap. Well, when the parasites realize that there's going to be a concentration of easy victims, that's where they all go. There are folks out there who are getting themselves declared guardians of these people. Once you are the guardians, you have the power to manage their assets, to choose where they live, who they can associate with, and what medical treatment they get. If you have that kind of power over a person, you have complete power, right? Now, are there good guardians out there? Absolutely. And is that a job that needs to be done? Absolutely it does. That's what parasites do. They find a good activity and weasel their way into it so it's hard to stop them. Right? Like, Wendy Martin is a good guardian, and we know that. I bet Wendy has spent more of her own money than, I'm sure she makes not a penny in helping to take care of some of the elderly people that she has. But this particular couple that was the focus of this article, they had a grown daughter who lived 10 miles away. She came every day to check on her parents. So they were being cared for. But this gal had gotten herself, she had to have been in collusion with some of the healthcare folks and with some members of the court. So all of their money she got control over. At one point, the grown daughter was making phone call after phone call saying, "What the heck just happened here?" For an 8-minute phone call where the daughter said, "What the heck just happened here?" Her parents got charged $24. Now, this particular lady got stopped, but we just cut off one of the tentacles. We didn't take care of the head of that problem. Okay, that is overwhelming to me. And then, of course, we all know about, you know, the Harvey Weinstein and the whole big can of worms that that opened. You know, I have to tell you, once upon a time, Shakespeare in Love and King's Speech were my favorite movies. I will not ever be able to watch them again because he was associated with those movies. The thing that I find the most troubling about that situation, and I'm sure many more, is that one female executive said that there were assistants whose job it was to lure those young girls into where he could get access to them, and they would lie, and they would say, "Oh, you're coming to a meeting about the movie, or it's a cast party," and they would show up, the door would shut behind them, and there he would be standing in his bathrobe. Ew. And then there's been a decades-long effort to keep this story shut up, to quiet the people who might have been inclined to, you know, blow the whistle on this guy. And where does this come from? This is the opposite of the kingdom. This is the feeling of entitlement. This is the feeling of, I'm better. I'm owed this for somehow. I don't know what to do in the face of this. One more. There's this family, I hadn't heard of these, I'm gonna say their names because I hope they end up in prison. The family are the Sacklers, I had never heard of them before. When I said the name of the company to Craig, he said, "Yeah, I know that company." The company is Purdue Pharma. Purdue Pharma developed OxyContin. Purdue Pharma, OxyContin, is that good? Yes. I've watched family members die of cancer. Nobody should have to die of cancer writhing in agony. So do I want those people to have the drug? Absolutely. It played a wonderful service. But Purdue Pharma wasn't making enough money that way. So they hired a bunch of doctors to do research and to say that all those stories about how addictive it was, that was all way overblown. Did they single-handedly create the opioid addiction? Probably not single-handedly, but this particular family had a pretty big role to play, and so far their money has kept them judgment-proof. We're feeling pretty East of Eden to me right now. Probably the story, and this is not exactly like those others, but a story that I can't quit thinking about is a small little congregation in Texas, right? A small little country church filled up with elderly people and little kids. And this twisted individual busts into that church, looks into the face of those helpless people. One of his victims was 18 months old, and he pulled the trigger. And I don't know what to do about that, because when we start to try to talk about what could be done so that it doesn't happen again, we get mad at each other because we so don't agree on it. So we just stop talking and we're at a stalemate. We are so way east of Eden, right? don't we sometimes, are we stopped in our tracks by sloth? Or are we stopped in our tracks by paralysis? Don't you sometimes feel a darkness approaching? Don't you sometimes feel this darkness encroaching relentlessly? And aren't we sometimes stopped by the realization that our efforts to stop it are pathetically puny? Don't we sometimes want to cry out to God, this is too much. This is crushing us. In that moment, God says, I know, it killed me. See, God came to earth. He was incarnated, and he came to earth to show us what creating the kingdom was going to look like. He healed sick people. He fed hungry people. He encouraged sinners. But he also wouldn't bow down to the powers that be. He knew what that was going to mean. But he kept doing it anyway. We talk a lot about Jesus was killed by the Jewish officials. Well, yeah, but you know who killed him? That Roman Empire. Were they the worst empire to have ever existed? No, but they were pretty bad. Their scare tactic of choice was the cross. This may be fake news, but I read one time that they crucified so many people that there was a shortage of trees in the area. Jesus was killed by those people. The point is, though, that he rose. When he rose, what rose with him was hope. Hope that good will ultimately win. Hope that God will ultimately win. Now, when? We don't know. And in the meantime, this is hard stuff. We are birthing God's kingdom. The labor pains that go with that can be pretty awful. So we ultimately have the hope, right? But is that enough? Sometimes I think we also need to look around at each other. Sitting next to you right now is somebody in whose chest beats that hope, that promise that if we keep holding up our little flickers of light, we're going to be able to dispel the darkness. You know what? Devin Talley doesn't cheat old people. You know what Devin Talley does when he sees an elderly person eating by himself in a restaurant? He pays for their meal. You know what? Craig Campbell doesn't perpetuate our dependence on opioids. He's one of the biggest whistleblowers there is. I can't tell you how many doctors hate him because he has said, oh, no, no, that prescribing pattern looks a little bit fishy to me. Henry Witt sitting up there, the last class I taught was called Leadership, and it was a collection of that was the most eclectic group of kids I've ever taught in my entire career. There were some kids in that class that nobody else ever talked to. You know who always talked to them? Henry did. You know who always validated their right to be there? Henry did. And guess what? We have lots of folks. There's Stephanie and Mert and Jenna and Kayla, wherever Kayla is right now, who have worked tirelessly to support and encourage those poor little traumatized babies. We spread light. Trevor takes his family to the ministry for the homeless people. Do you know who ends up, lots of those folks who are homeless, they're drug addicted, they're mental health issues. Does Trevor take advantage of them? On the contrary, He bravely, I think, because I've wondered sometime about him taking my grandbabies there, he bravely shows up and ministers to those people. That is spreading light. Jamie one time, Jamie's out with the baby right now, Jamie told me before Trevor and Jamie got pregnant with Larkin, she felt really strongly that she wanted to go on a mission trip to Brazil, and her sister went. And most of you know Jamie and JC. Well, one of the coolest stories that she has from that trip is one of the things that they did for some of those poor people along the river is they put up a basketball goal. And then those two taught these kids how to play basketball. Can you imagine being taught how to play basketball by Jamie and JC, these two, you know, golden-haired goddesses? How amazing that must have been. We spread light. We dispel the darkness with our acts of kindness by saying, I am not going to be a part of the darkness. I'm going to break this darkness up in partnership with my God. And sometimes the way that we spread that light, it seems like it's not a lot. It ends up being huge. Ultimately, it is what will let us win. I would like to end, because I'm an old English teacher, with a poem. This one was written by Naomi Shihad Nye, who is one of my all-time favorites. I have to tell you the story of what led to the writing of this poem. When she and her husband were first married, their honeymoon was in, and I should have looked this up more closely, but they were in a South American country. And they were on a bus traveling to wherever they were going to end up, and the bus was held up. They lost everything, and one of the people on the bus was shot and killed. So she said, you know, they're sitting, they get off of the bus after this awful thing has happened, and they're sitting there, and a Spanish-speaking person came up to them and asked them in Spanish, you know, what happened? And they tried in their broken Spanish to explain, and he said back to them, I am so sorry that happened to you. And then he went on to help them. But she said the expression on his face was so instantly comforting. I'm so sorry that that happened to you. So sometimes the light is just by simple acts of kindness. So this is Kindness by Naomi Shihad Nye. Wait a second, I got this so I can see it. Lots of light here, though, okay. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop, the passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must wake up with sorrow. You must speak it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend or your God. Amen.